Окей. Ребят, всем привет. Это подкаст «Человек с камерой». В эфире Антон. В гостях у меня сегодня очень крутой гость. На самом деле, один из тех людей, кем я персонально вдохновляюсь. Человек, который мне показал очень много, не зная никак о моем существовании. Я никогда не думал, на самом деле, что у нас получится с ним записаться. В общем, в гостях Майкл Кристофер Браун, один из моих самых любимых фотографов, и это просто честь для меня. Hi, Майкл.
Hello.
Yeah. How are you? As I say to our Russian listeners, I'm so proud to tell with you, because you're one of my favorite photographers, who just gave me some inspiration to create and see more deep, to look deeper in our society and in people. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, it's my pleasure to be here and chat with you.
Yeah. How are you? It's all okay in States right now? Or some problems?
Yeah, I'm good. This past week I was out on the streets covering many of the protests here in Los Angeles. And now I'm just at home, just sorting things out. We have my partner and I have a little baby, so she takes up at least half of my time.
Oh, it's nice.
Yeah, yeah,
really,
it's amazing.
It's very nice.
Yeah,
sometimes it's a blessing. It's baby. It's always a blessing, and I'm looking forward into some kind of future and think how it will be to me. Or someone who I know, or some of my friends. And at first, how it reflects on your photography work? You have a baby, you need to spend a lot of time with her, and how it changed?
Oh yeah, so many things have changed. She's 17 months old, so every month and you know, every week, every day, sometimes she changes quite a bit. So before the coronavirus, we had a nanny coming 5 days a week, which would allow me to work on my work, whether I was shooting or here in the studio, much of the day. But now here for the past few months, I spend at least half the day with her, and you know, in the beginning, that was really challenging because I like to spend a certain amount of time working. And, you know, I wondered if it was really possible for me to spend that amount of time. But it was so good for me ultimately to have that time with her and, you know, be spending at least 6 hours a day caring for her and, you know, going on walks and, you know, going to the park and such, and just showing her how to do things, you know, and she's learning words now, and it's also affected my photography in other ways as well. Just the way that I look at families now when I photograph them, you know, if I see a father on the street, that, you know, like at the protest, there were like a number of fathers with their kids there, and it just, you know, I have an understanding of what that experience is like because I am one. So yeah, it's made me more efficient with my time. You know, I wonder like how I spent all my time in the past before I had a kid. You know, 24 hours in the day is a lot of hours, but now if I have a few hours in the studio, I'm able to accomplish quite a bit. It's helped with just grounding me more and anchoring me here to Los Angeles. You know, before, a few years ago, I was spending much of my time on the road traveling and living in other countries. And, you know, most of the past few years I've been here and fairly stationary. So it's also sort of forced me to look at my surroundings a little closer and a little more intimately, and to understand just, you know, the ways of working that have really become a habit over all these years, some of which are good and some of which aren't very good. So, altogether, the having a baby has just slowed me down, slowed the process down, so I'm allowed to look more critically at the work I've made and the work I'm making now. I mean, one thing that just, since last year that I've realized is just going on my Instagram, how many of my captions weren't captions, because I began using Instagram as a way to just share images for fun, and I think over the years it just became, a place where I would load images, but not necessarily with full caption information, because it was Instagram in the beginning. It was like a playful platform. But so that became a habit, and I've realized, like, relatively recently how it's much more important now, especially now these days, because Instagram is such a, it's really the platform in a sense for photographers. It's really the way that we share our work with the world. So it's super important to have as much information with, the photograph as possible. Not all photographs, but a lot of the photographs I make are challenging and they can be charged imagery. And so it's important to give viewers context.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I'm just think how people can look at my images and what I should not so much political or something social, but I think some of my pictures, maybe it's some protests that happened in Moscow in last year in 2019. It was last August, as I remember correctly. But sometimes I can think this is my platform. This is not so much people. It's just maybe 800 people. A lot of them not active, but some of them can see, can understand, and look. Maybe something. Maybe it's changed their minds. Maybe it's changed their position to the world and to the how our government works. I think Instagram, it's one of the thing that can change minds in different ways if we use it correctly. And I think you use it. And a lot of photographers use it like this. And I want to ask you about your beginning, and as I remember correctly, you was a part of Magnum Photos, yes? And now it's still part of your life, or you go out and say goodbye to Magnum?
Yeah, I'm out of Magnum, but I still have a number of friends at
Contacts.
Magnum, and yeah, it's a great organization. I mean, I for much of my career, I sort of looked at Magnum as being, a place, or the place to ultimately be. It's just one thing I love about the agency is how they, besides the community, is how, your work is spread out in multiple directions. So they can help you get assignments and help, promote you and sell prints and help you with workshops and all these other things. And so for a lot of people, I think it's very beneficial being a part of an agency like Magnum.
It's as I say to other people, it's just a powerful resource that you can use. But yourself is the most important resource that you have.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. Yeah, ultimately it's about the work that you make, so it's not, yeah, it's not about the the agency or the publication or how many photo books you have or all these things. It's just about it's about the quality of the work, and that's very much related to having a making work that is necessary for you. So it has to be work that someone really feels is necessary and has to be made, because that is when the work is the most honest. So it's not about the way the images look. It's not about the appearance or the color or the the composition. For me at least, it's about whether the images in the project are coming from the heart. And I think a lot of photographers, including myself, have had have been lucky to have projects that sort of shape themselves, because ultimately, the good projects are, they come with a lot of work, but they also come out of the, from places where, that we can't always control. We're sort of given these things. And but that can only happen if your heart's in the right place. And because it is a visual art, it can be there are chances to be easily distracted away from what is necessary and where the passion is. So I think a good example, a recent example is the protests that I was covering over the past week. There's so many scenes of action and whether it's marching or looting or whatever it was, there's constant action happening around me. And so what do I photograph? Is it the action or is it my response into that action? It's like for my projects, I really try and be, and try and understand my emotional state and what I'm drawn to, and stay close with that curiosity while I'm there on the scene, because otherwise I won't, I'll be like blind. It's you have to be very focused on that sense. It's like that intuition. I mean, I'm lucky because I do, one thing I do have, one something I have is a pretty strong intuition while I'm working, which is really what's what guides me every time I photograph.
In some cases, it's not a planning, but your intuition that leads you to right choices, right frames, or right photographs, I think. Because in this, I don't know how to send to tell, it's some different discipline, if it will be correctly, some different discipline photography, some different genre. It's a lot of for us, for photographers, the intuition and some instincts that lead us, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's photography, and that's kind of part of the, going back into Instagram, it's just we have a platform where multiple genres of photography are sort of clustered into one. You get everything from from
Everything
fashion
you want.
to, war photography. Or so it's just anyway, that's kind of leading off in another conversation, but I but yeah, but at the end of the day, I just think like from what I've learned from older mentors of mine and what I've learned in these past years of just working is that the times that I'm really interacting with the guts of the work is when I'm out in the world and when I'm seeing and experiencing the world in a way that is true and that is honest, and I'm following curiosity with a strong sense of wanting to find out more about the story that I'm photographing or the people behind it. I mean, it seems like with the work that I've really felt the most fulfilled by, it's work that is driven, of course, not by the photography, but it's driven by the story of whoever I'm photographing it. Like, it has to start with an emotion in the gut. It has to start with a very strong emotion before I go out there and shoot.
Yeah, I understand. And you told about masters of photography or about some old school photographers who trained you. And I want to ask you, how much the influence of your teacher of or someone who makes some no give some knowledge to you, someone on who you look, but who you see how they work, how many influence they have on you? A lot of older photographers. Maybe some of your colleagues from Magnum or someone with who you work now.
Yeah, a lot of influence. I mean, I've been influenced by everybody, really. Like, especially early on, because I think, and I think a lot of younger photographers share this, where you're more easily influenced, you're sort of a blank slate. So, but really starting out, because I grew up in a farming community in Washington State that was really isolated from any like photography school, but what I had was photography books at the local library. And I remember one of the first books that I checked out when I was in high school was Robert Frank's book, The Lines of My Hand, which I remember looking at this book and thinking, wow, this is so free. This is like an incredible work, so simple, so free, and showed me that, well, that book and a number of other books showed me that this was a way that I could communicate in the world, especially at that time, because I had a speech impediment when I was a kid growing up, so I avoided speaking much of the time. So photography became a way that I could express myself.
Yeah, I
And then
understand
just
sometimes.
over, yeah, and then just over the years, and throughout high school and college, and then after, into my 20s, I was, I would reach out to photographers whose work I like and respected, and I would ask questions, and I would actually seek them out. And then, years later, when I was living in New York, I was living in a building that where there were a number of photographers living there whose work I really loved, and so I was very lucky to meet many of them and to be able to sort of show them work and, cultivate relationships with them and ultimately learn from them. And the learning continues now and to this day. And yeah, some of them are at Magnum and some of them are, in other places. National Geographic, and then just others are just friends. Mostly older friends of mine who aren't even necessarily photographers. Which is something else I've learned in the past few years living here in Los Angeles. I moved here 3 years ago from New York, and my community here pretty much I think I have one photographer friend or maybe a couple photographer friends, but everybody else, they do completely different things. And this has been so healthy for me because in the past I was so absorbed in the world of photography and was not able to see it for what it was, which is of course a very small group of our, small group of humans, there's not that many people in this world who are actually photographers or who actually even are interested in the kind of photography that we are, so.
Yeah, it's definitely. You know, I told I speak with one man. It's Russian photographer Stanislav Liepa, and he told me one good, I think, something good. He told that I try not to speak and not to make a lot of friends in photographers community. Because I want to be more artist, and I try to speak to make friends with different kind of artists, musicians, classical artists, maybe some dancers or maybe actors, not only photographers, not make myself in prison of photography, not make myself locked in this small community. What do you think about?
I think it's very important. I mean, it reminds me of what Hemingway said. I believe it was the Nobel Prize that he received, and his response, his presentation, what he said was, he said that there's a number of organizations that exist for writers, but that he doubts if they improve their writing because a writer has to do their work alone. And that really stuck in my head because, in speaking of influence, influence is important because it's important to see what's already been, what's out there. It's like if you're a writer, you read books, you have to be familiar with the history that has been laid before you and, ways in which you can expand on that history or, not necessarily redesign the wheel, but at least create a new conversation, create a unique conversation, which is your own conversation with yourself ultimately. And yeah, and so I've just, I've, for the first time in a long time, I've just sort of come back around to, understanding that the isolation from the photographic community can be very beneficial. Sometimes it can also work against you, though. Like I had a scenario last week where I was photographing the protests all week long, and then a photograph of mine ended up on the cover of New York Magazine, and then I
Oh, that's
began.
nice.
Yeah, it was amazing. And then I began receiving all these messages on my Instagram from photographers, many of whom live in New York, who were saying, "Hey, like we as a community had all agreed that we wouldn't accept the publishing of our work, in these times while these protests are going on, and that we would." We would hand our contacts over to the black photographers, because it's their story and such. And, why did you allow them to publish your work? And, part of my response was, well, I had no idea that
That they used it.
there is this agreement, or something, or that there was this movement happening to, I'd seen the list of the black photographers that was being passed around on Instagram, and I shared that, and but I had no idea that it was like, photographers who weren't black were sort of agreeing to not
Yeah.
So yeah, it's good and bad being outside the photographic communities.
I think it's good for a photographer to upgrade his own skills of photography itself, and bad for a photographer to communicate with other world and communicate with other creators. I think it depends here, not in something different. Yeah. And I want to understand what's important for you in photography or in photographs. Is it self-reflection or a way to remember some different moments? Maybe it's some way to show the moment to other people, show what the others can see, or maybe it's something more for yourself right now.
Yeah, it depends on what I'm photographing, but in general, it's usually a combination of reasons why I go to the street to photograph. And for example, at the protest last week, it was one that I'm completely believe in the movement and Black Lives Matter and wanting to be on the street in support. First of all, as a citizen of the United States, as someone who lives in Los Angeles and someone who cares, a human who cares about other humans who's who have, who live within a system that is not designed for them. So that's, the number one reason that I'm on the street. So I'm there on the street and, I have my camera, I have my phone. I'm gonna take pictures, of course, because I'm a photographer and, but I'm not photographing because I feel like I have a responsibility out there. It's like I photographed because I felt that it was necessary. I had to because I was witnessing history. And again, it's without a responsibility. It's more like witnessing history because that is what was fulfilling me in the moment. It's what I felt like I was called, I was called into the street as a citizen, as a fellow human who believes in what's happening, but that, part of my role and part of the way that I can contribute is through photography. And so, it's partly because of, my feelings for my fellow men, and it's partly because of, photography, and then it's also, I guess I should say that, part of the experience of, being out there in the street for the fellow men is really, because of this belief in justice, and human rights and
Yeah.
human dignity. These are things that have driven me into conflicts in other parts of the world, where I want to experience and be a part of these transitions that are seemingly necessary for people to transition into societies that are more fair. And
Yeah.
it's always more complicated than that at the end of the day. I've gone into situations very naively, which has worked against me, but has also helped me. You know, there's a certain value in naivete, but yeah, in general, it's you know, I try and engage in projects that I feel connected with on a deeper level. So, for example, Skid Row here in Los Angeles, I connect with many, many people in that community, even though I've never been homeless and
Yeah,
I've
I see
never
what
been a
you mean
drug
by that.
addict, I've never been in prison, etc. I have experienced PTSD, and which was really heavy for me, and had a major impact on my life, and had to go through a long process of coming out of that. And many of the people who I meet on Skid Row are experiencing, you know, are right in the middle of experiencing trauma and PTSD, and I have a lot of empathy for these people. And so ultimately that is the first reason why I'm there, because I connect with them. And in some ways I connect with that community there more than I can in any other community in Los Angeles. Simply because I think when you've experienced those, you know, those dark parts of yourself and ways that have caused you to, you know, in ways that have changed your life and have caused you to go through major changes for the worse and for the better, it's I'll always carry a piece of that with me. I don't know if trauma completely ever goes away. You just sort of learn how to deal with it.
Yeah,
And many of the people I meet down there, they are treated for it, but they haven't learned how to address it, you know, and how to not let it control them. And, you know, much of that I think is partly because it's just they experience other mental illnesses as well, and addictions, and these things are barriers to real change, you know.
Yeah, and as you tell, I while you're speaking, I remembered two photographers. At first, it's greatness. It's Sebastio Salgado, who look at the people and photographs them. And someone told about him that his heart is pay. Oh, it's hard to say in English. In Russian, it's like "сердце болело за людей." It's like a heart hurts for people. In Russian, we have. And the second photographer, as I remember, it's Russian photographer Evgeny Feldman, who tell me one great word, one great sentence, I think, that he told, as photographer, I wanna be an archivist to archive these moments, to show them, to show it to the future, to our future generations, to be they can see it, and maybe they wouldn't do the same mistakes as we do, in some kind. Yeah, but I think your way in photography is closer to Sebastio Salgado, who do it more like for people now to try to change this world. That's I think. Yeah,
Yeah, something
and
I saw when I first moved here to Los Angeles. Sorry, I mean,
yeah.
something I one of the first sort of experiences I had after moving here while driving around the city was driving through Skid Row and just being shocked by what I saw. Just hundreds of, thousands of people living in tents on the side of the road, on sidewalks. It was an apocalyptic scene. And that reminded me of other scenes I'd seen in the past in other countries. And, it left me wondering, like, how, this idea of, like, how we treat our most exposed and our most vulnerable citizens in our society is a reflection of the society as a whole, in a sense, like, and I wanted to understand how these people were living and how they were coping, when just a few blocks away you have, extremely wealthy people who live in high-end condos, and it's all happening here in my hometown, in Los Angeles. And so,
Yeah.
yeah, I've always been drawn to this idea of, in the existence of the, those who live in the lower half of our societies, because, ultimately those who have everything, they don't really, they're not, they are my concern, but, ultimately we don't need to see, or I don't, me myself, I don't, I have no interest in seeing more photographs of them or in covering them as a photographer, because I think, of course, like, these people who live at the bottom, they're the people that need visibility, and need to be seen, and it's very tricky when working in a place like Skid Row, because there are so many people who are so vulnerable and who are in these horrible states of existence, and there's these questions that I've had to ask myself constantly of how much I can do or who I can approach or who I can interview and who I can photograph. And so I'm constantly asking when I'm speaking with the people there, I'm constantly asking myself if I feel that they are present enough. There's which is always sort of a subjective choice, because some people are, they are present, but at the same time they're sort of in another world. And but I feel like this is important for society, especially local society, the people who live in Los Angeles. It's important for them to see these people and to listen to them, and to understand, for example, the man who stands on the street corner asking for money. So many people just keep their windows up, of course, because you don't know this man, or you drive by him. And even walking around Skid Row, I mean, every time I'm there, I see cars going by with, they have their cameras and their phones and they're shooting photos and videos, and they keep driving by because a lot of people are afraid because of the stigma. And
Yeah.
and the stigma is, part of the stigma is just we as a society have not done our jobs well enough, because there should not be a stigma, because most of the people I've met on stigma, on Skid Row are nice people, good people ultimately. They have problems, but our avoidance of them in general is not helping them. We have all these organizations down there that can provide food shelter, health, and other assistance. And these organizations are doing a great job, but I feel, I strongly feel that like we as a society need to be more engaged with these people, and just walking around, asking questions, listening to them speak. This I've found to be a kind of, it's helpful. And it goes both ways. It helps me understand them, and I think it maybe also sometimes helps them understand, their situation a little more, or at least helps helps being approached by and sort of having a conversation with an outsider who is genuinely interested in their story,
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, it's like sometimes speaking with people, I'm have not so much experience of working with different kinds of people, but in those genres that I use in my photography, and sometimes as I speak to some people, tell them, they tell me something, and we have good conversations, and they are sometimes look at themselves in some different angles. I think it's one of good things in photography that we can show to human or the whole humanity from the another angle. That's I think. Yeah. And personally for you, it's some kinds of questions about yourself. Did you think about, right, here's a question, about concept of taste? What's a good taste? What's a bad taste? What's a trained taste or not trained? What do you think about it? Because a lot of photographers, some different authors speak about it, and I want to know your personal opinion about taste.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little confused by the question. So what do you mean? What do you mean by
Taste in
taste?
art. It's in art, it's like to separate good, some. In art, to separate good from bad, some interesting from not so interesting.
Okay, so what do I think is good
Not so. I
or
think
bad, or
it's more concept, how to differentiate it, how to separate it.
how to separate the good from the bad, you
From
mean?
bad in art. In art, yes.
Oof. Yeah, well, I'm certainly not a I'm not an art expert by any means. So yeah, the end of the day, I'm just, I'm a photographer. But of course, I look at art, and I look at photography, and I, for me, I mean, I'm very, very much interested in a cross medium. And in combining photography with video and text and even artifacts and ephemera. And yeah, a friend of mine, a mentor of mine, not long ago referred me to the work of Bruce Conner, who is a mixed media artist. So I try and look at a lot of it, but for me, at the end of the day, I'm not. The concept of a work of art is interesting, though at the end of the day, when I'm walking through a museum space, I'm looking for work that grabs me. Because, and just as an outsider, as someone who rarely participates in the art world, so much of what I see walking through museums is though again, I understand the importance of it, and I can understand it conceptually. It's not as interesting as work that I feel can be more fully understood by a wide variety of viewers, especially viewers who have no history in art whatsoever, and so yeah, this is one reason why I really love like street art and Banksy and work like this where it's conceptual but it's not it's not over the top. It's like you understand it immediately.
It's
And
not a classic art.
yeah, it gives you a value immediately that you can apply in your contemporary life. I think this is a benefit, like a huge benefit. And yeah, as a photographer, I mean, I've been lucky that I sort of I feel like I've had really one project in my career where I was able to speak cross-platform and have those platforms be cohesive in a way that could be presented as a work, as something that could live as a work of art. But yeah, but I'm certainly probably not the one to speak on this subject
No,
ultimately.
but yeah, but it's your personal opinion, and it's every time it's interesting how it's changed from author to author, from one person to other. And you tell about art, it's must grab you. But what do you mean? It's something inside or something in your mind? Maybe it's you can tell something more concrete.
Yeah, so let me give you an example. So I was when I was in Massachusetts not long ago, I went to the Norman Rockwell Museum, and I know that like in the art world, I mean, I don't even know how Norman Rockwell is seen, but I think he's seen as more of an illustrator and someone who was, at the end of the day, of course, not as interesting as someone like, say, Picasso. But, and again, I'm sure it's mostly due to my lack of education in art and, in art history and everything. When I look at a Picasso, some of them I understand, many of them I can't understand. I would have to read, I would have to have a class and so I could understand, and that's amazing. But at the same time, I wonder about the benefit of it for the world at large. I'm not saying his work is useless. Obviously, he was a genius and one of the greatest artists we've ever had. And but the work that I think I'm ultimately interested in is work that can be seen by anybody and immediately understood. This is why I like, the work of Hemingway, and this is why I like the work of Norman Rockwell. It could just be the American in me that likes things very simple. But when I was at the Rockwell Museum, it was just great because I was just like walking around and what he was speaking about, was painting about was American life at the time. These were the issues we were dealing with, and so Yeah, the art is great, I think, if it's ultimately not about the artist, you know, if it's about what they're trying to say. I feel like it's at, you know, the strongest when we can sort of lose the artist in a way, and we're just getting this, you know, this powerful message. And I mean, you know, that said, it could also work in the greatest way if it is about the artist. It really depends on what the work is about. But in general, by and large, I guess I'm attracted to, you know, the more easily understood but like well executed work, because I see it as a real you know, and it's not about the responsibility of an artist who ultimately has no responsibility, but I see it as work that can be very beneficial for the world, really. You know, it's like a great piece of music. You don't have to understand, you know, the words of a song or speak the same language or, you know, even know what the song is about, but something about the sound and the structure of the music, you know, creates an emotion that has value. And so anyway, that's my two cents about art.
I understood. It's it's a lot like other creative people who don't want to try to describe why they like it, why they do it, but it's something inside, something that can, as you say, grab you and make it something inside, pulls some trigger inside.
Yeah, exactly.
And going back to you, to your way, I want to ask, what is important for you to improve, to develop, to exercise in yourself, to stay interesting for yourself and your auditory, for people who look at you, who follow you? What do you think? What's important in it?
So, what do you think is important for staying
For yourself.
interesting and relevant for myself as a photographer or
Yes.
just myself in
For
general?
yourself. For yourself as photographer at first, and for yourself in general at second.
Yeah, I guess looking at the work that I've made over the years, much of it is along similar lines. Much of it involves the subject of humanity and transition in some way, whether it's people on Skid Row experiencing trauma and PTSD in their lives, to revolution in Libya, to changing society in China. I've always really been drawn to this idea of psychological transition along with that, and something else that is important is justice. You know, having empathy for people who I want to try and understand more. You know, and being out there in the world, and learning about the world is really, you know, that, you know, ultimately drives me, maybe more than anything, because I did grow up in a place that was farmland and sort of away from the politics, and certainly at that time there was no internet, you know. So, but my father was a physician, and he would go and work at orphanages around the world, and he would bring back photographs and have these slideshows in front of the community. So from a very young age, I sort of learned how photography could be a window into the world. You know,
He's a nice man.
some of the most powerful presentations I ever saw were of, my father in our living room with all the lights off, and just my sister and I, and him and my mother, and him sharing his photographs from these places that he went to. And something about the silence, and the darkness, and just the slide projector, and his words, were so powerful. And then just like, as far as methodology, I am interested. I mean, even though I've been using the iPhone now for a while, because there's something about the phone that I feel frees me from the world of photography, and the history of photography, and everything that surrounds that. And I think that that's somehow connected with learning photography from my father, who gave me my first camera. And but there was something about breaking free from a kind of control, and limitations of the camera, which in a way it doesn't really make sense. A camera has more options than a phone. A phone is more limiting, but the but
Some
of
kind.
course, in another way, yeah, the limitation of the phone, the vice of the phone is a virtue. Like, it actually frees you, because you only have one option. And so I really enjoy experimenting with the phone. And now, in these past couple of years, I've been shooting, everything vertically, and because a lot of it goes on Instagram, so that's why I shoot it vertically, but also because it's a new way for me. I don't see anyone else, out there shooting vertically, and it keeps it fresh for me. And but now I've also been on Skid Row. I've been using the Mamiya 6 camera, film camera.
Oh,
Yeah, which
that's nice.
is amazing. I mean, it broke a few weeks ago, and so I had to send it in. I'm waiting for it to get back. But yeah, I've
Oof.
shot a fair amount of that. It's just now I'm like faced with the process of getting it scanned in and all that, which is a process. But it's okay. It's beautiful seeing it show up on the screen after it's, after it's in, and all the marks of the dust that you have to spot, and all these things. But and then I have another project in mind, sort of. It's also a homeless project, but I want to shoot it with an 8x10 camera. So I have a friend here who has one, and she's going to loan
Eight
me
by ten.
her camera. Yeah, an 8x10. Yeah.
Man,
Yeah, have
it's
you tried
next
8x10?
division. I tried 6x7. It's the largest
Okay.
format that I used. It's Mamiya 67. It's RB.
Yeah, it's a
I
great
own
camera.
one. Yeah,
Yeah.
I have one. In
Nice.
love, in love with this camera. It's my baby. Some kind.
Yeah, you still shoot a
Really
lot with
love.
it?
Yeah. It's
Yeah.
the last roll of film I shot in February before we go to lockdown, totally lockdown.
Oh,
But
yeah.
now I have some physical and mind statement to take it and go to the streets. I took it with me to trip in Par to Paris and a
Ooh,
few
nice.
borders. Yeah, borders, some flights, and I finally made some pictures that I really like because it's something different.
Yeah, it's an
Yeah,
amazing
and
camera. Like, it really has a special feel to it. Love it.
yeah,
Yeah, the six
and
by seven and also the 6x6, yeah.
yeah, and one friend of mine now trying to use 4x5 large format camera. And he told it's nice and slow process because 36 or even 12 frames it's too much. He needs only one.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, I love this idea of slowing down the process. This is especially because I can be, sometimes I can be someone who's moving too fast. Actually, a lot of times. So I think that
Yeah.
this would really would help me look at this new project in another way. Plus, just the quality. The quality is just so phenomenal.
And here in Moscow we have a lab, classical laboratory that makes all process development and scanning in 24 hours.
Wow, that
And
is amazing.
yeah, it's for black and white and cinema film, and for classically C41 it's 3 hours.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
So, are you doing drum scans?
No, it's too much money for me, I think. Now I use classical scans. But maybe sometime if I make some really nice, really great, I'll buy for myself an optical print of this frame. And one of my friends now trying to make it body himself in his own flat.
Yeah, I bought an Epson scanner that I think is good enough for just seeing what is there,
Yeah.
but eventually I'll do the drum scans. But yeah, it really helps in focusing while on the scene, just being more focused and while shooting, and more centered in the intent. Yeah, of course, every
Yeah,
camera
think
like
more.
has its advantage. Even with the phone, it has its advantages, that these other cameras can't compare with. So it's about like finding, the right camera for the project. So often I kind of that's essentially how I choose, the camera that I use for a project. So I don't use the same thing in every work,
Yeah, it depends from the situation, from the some story, from all other aspects that can depends. And it's as my friends say, I use this camera that I need more. Sometimes I can use phone, sometimes I can use classical digital camera, sometimes I can use medium format camera, or sometimes I can use large format. It depends, and it's as you say, it's the same for good photographers, I think, in some simple ways, I think. Yeah, and I want to ask you one more question about your working style. Is it In Russian, it's we have special sentence for people who push the button and looking for the frame later. It's like using 1DX and push the button and take 20 frames, and after look for one. It's in Russian we tell it кнопкожимство. But it's one way for reportage, or you use one verified frame that you try to create by yourself, or you just filming all around.
Yeah, I'm kind of all around. Of course, if I'm using the Mia, then it's one at a time. It's more crafted. I don't really experiment much with the Mamiya, but when I'm using the phone, then I can do anything, right? I could do the machine gun approach,
Yeah.
where you're just like shooting off 100 images within a few seconds, which I have done. It's interesting, when experimenting, like even last week when I was in a crowd, when I was in a march, and something I was interested in photographing was in a place where I couldn't see it. So I'm like reaching over the crowd with the phone, knowing what I want to photograph, however, not knowing the exact frame because I can't see it. So I'm holding the phone over a crowd, and I'm just, I keep my finger on the shutter. So I'm shooting, I think I shot like almost 100 frames altogether, but the entire time I'm like moving the phone in a circle so I can be sure that I'm getting all the content that I'm going for. So again, I'm just like using it as, as a way to capture the content that I'm going for. So I think it's, ultimately, if you use it in that way or just use it to experiment, it's all good. There's like something about releasing control as a photographer. Yeah, I always like think of, when I think of that, I always recall what the artist Chuck Close said about photography. And I can't remember his exact words, but essentially it's like, was something along the lines of like, photography is the only art form in which you have these accidental masterpieces. Because
Ooh,
when you think of like, when you think of like, if you're a writer or if you're a poet or a painter, if you want to create a masterpiece, you can't just like, throw your brush at the, at the canvas. You need to have a certain amount of training, and so you can craft something that can be called a masterpiece, I would say. I mean, I don't know of any cases where, that hasn't happened. I guess it's possible. But with photography, the camera can, you can set the camera on a tripod and just, have the timer on it and just have it on the street and have it shoot a photo any minute, every minute, and maybe the camera will capture a scene that is amazing. And yeah, you sort of planned this, but it wasn't you that captured it. So I say that because it's because experimentation and allowing yourself to shoot like 100 frames a second if you want is not necessarily a bad thing. It just in the end it's all it can be beneficial shooting that way, but I don't, I mean, as far as a way of working, I don't really do that all the time. It's somewhat rare that I have a situation in which I'm, consistently shooting that way. I mean, on Skid Row, I've been shooting a lot of imagery, and a lot of that is because I'm trying to just experiment with like height. So I'll shoot a lot from my waist, and I'll shoot a lot from overhead, and just when I'm not interviewing or shooting portraits, I'll just like as a way to capture the experience. Yeah, because I'm trying to, capture more of the visceral response and the visceral experience of walking around Skid Row. Which has this like certain raw energy to it that is like highly charged, and so so it makes more sense in that place to experiment in that way. But
And using different styles of shooting.
yeah, definitely. I mean, ultimately, I don't like have a certain beliefs. One way is not necessarily more right than the next way. It's about choosing the tool and the method that is going to best serve your intentions as a photographer. And the idea, the concept of your whatever it is that you're photographing.
And as you tell about experimenting, I bless you.
Yeah, that was my partner. Thank you. What was your question? Sorry.
Yeah, it's about experimenting. I want to ask you about mobile photography in general. Did you use some different apps, maybe some different cameras or some different editing tools? Because I have one story about app that I used for motion blur. It's like for trails. One woman photographer, I asked her about which software did she use for shooting, because she has it use it in very different and creative way, but she wouldn't tell it to me. But okay,
you still there?
I understand. Yeah, I'm still there.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just telling the story, and she didn't want to tell me what it's the software, and I need to look for it by myself. I searched through the internet, and one day I found it video from her masterclass for her special event, where she showed this app, just interface, not the name, not the app icon, just interface. After maybe hour or two of learning and of looking, I found this is on YouTube, where one man from India tells about this app, and that was very interesting journey to found that app called Bluristic, and maybe it can be interesting for you to your creativity too. It's on the App Store, and maybe use something. Bluristic, Bluristk, C, sorry, it's like blur.
Got it. Okay.
It's a strange name, but if you want, I can give you a link. But
that's great.
About
yeah,
you,
check it out.
Did you use some additional software for camera for shooting on mobile?
No, on mobile, no. I just use the phone camera.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
I mean, initially, years ago, I would use apps because in the beginning, the phone camera was not so fast, and it was not very responsive, and there were apps that were more responsive. Like Hipstamatic is one of the apps I used at the time because it was instantaneous. So you would hit the button and the image would be immediately captured. Whereas with the phone camera at that time, and I mean the iPhone camera at that time had a lag to it, so you have to
deal with the limitations.
A split second later, yeah. So, but then the Hipstamatic also had its limitations at that time. You could only shoot one image every 15 seconds, and then sometimes the app would crash and you would lose all your pictures. So, but yeah, the iPhone camera now, I feel it's kind of, especially for street photography and for shooting candidly on the fly, I haven't tried other apps because I feel like the phone camera app is the quickest. And so I'm just like looking for the quickest and the most sort of raw way to capture things, that'll capture the most information. I mean, I looked into these apps that are like raw image capture apps on the phone that'll sort
Yeah.
of where you can adjust exposure and such, and so you can get more of the highlights and more of the shadows. But that's all a process. You know, I feel like it gets in the way of my photography when I have to look at the app and then make the settings and then shoot. I like having less control. Like, I like not being in so much control when I'm photographing. I like to be very loose and very simple. So,
Yeah,
but
understand.
that said, I mean, if there's an app out there that is not that hard to use and pretty straightforward, that could help me capture more of a range and exposure, that would be great. I'm very interested, you know.
Yeah, I'll send you a few links or a few names of these apps that I think is very best from the App Store.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, and
I
yeah, it's
appreciate
not a
it.
problem. Yeah, and we have some authors, maybe great masters, who affect on us as an artist. But maybe you can tell some authors or some great masters who affect of you more. Affect to you more, on you more.
Yeah, great, great masters who are artists, right? Like, not photographers.
Yes. And the classic artists and photographers.
Yeah.
Because I think it's both of these directions affects on us.
Yeah. Well, as I mentioned earlier, Bruce Conner, who
Yeah.
was a West Coast located artist and lived in San Francisco. I love his work. I've just sort of learned of it more as of recent. But yeah, but I'm really interested in, like, sort of more monumental works as well. Like, I love Christo's work. I love, the work of Richard Serra, sculpture. I mean, I try and look at, like, a variety of art that I feel is bold and that is, like, fresh and that nobody is doing. But photographers, in terms of photographers, I mean, I've always loved the work of Jim Goldberg, and Josef Kudelka.
Oh, this
Many of
man
the
is.
Magnum photographers, yeah. Many of the Magnum photographers, love their work, but also the work of more photographic artists, like Richard Moss. He's one of my contemporaries. He's doing really amazing work, and I also love how he collaborates with other artists. I think this is, something that can be so beneficial, and so yeah, and it's something that I've been, in my past couple projects, I've been, I keep saying to myself, I need to find some collaborators. I need to find collaborators because we can just do so much more with our work sometimes if we, if we have a few specialists. Who are doing completely different things, but who are all contributing to this, like, this cross-platform work of art,
Yeah, I understand.
know?
And if we can tell about concrete things, maybe you can tell your top three of your favorite music albums, top three of your movies, and maybe some of literature. Literature.
Music albums,
Right.
huh?
Yeah. I think
Oh
it's
man.
affecting us.
Yeah, I'm interested in, like, a pretty wide variety of music.
Yeah, as all of
But
us.
yeah, I would say, like, in the past few years it's been more electronic music, but But then recently, recently it's been like this music coming from the Amazon, from the indigenous. I sort of use music in ways that will contribute to the vibe, you know, as anyone else, I guess. But it's hard for me to name albums because, you know, what I usually do is I just get on Spotify and I'll do like these
Maybe
mixes.
bands.
Yeah, I'll do these random mixes, and so I just, you know, that'll lead me on to other songs. But I really love, I'm really into Moby's albums that is ambient.
It's a nice choice.
What are they called? Yeah, it's Los Angeles Ambience. He has a couple albums like this, and it's really great music for getting in the zone. But then, you know, going way back, like into the 90s, one of the first albums that I loved was Nirvana's "Smells Like Teen Spirit." I still love that
Yes,
album.
it's classic.
Yeah,
Yeah,
and that was a time, you
that's
know,
so nice.
in that time I was in high school, and they would play, like, I had friends who would go to Seattle, and they would hear them play in these little clubs. You know, they would just like show up in these places randomly. Yeah, that was when grunge was in full swing, you know, Nirvana, Soundgarden, Mudhoney. Like, there were so many amazing bands at that time, and I was in high school, so we listened to all that music, and yeah, that was really fuel for like much of our, you know, the energy that we put into snowboarding and, you know, everything else. I was really into the outdoor sports at that time. But yeah, since then I've kind of slowed down. As you can see, I'm more interested in the Moby ambience. Movies and films, you know, I watch a lot of documentaries. Most recently I saw a documentary called Planet of the Humans, which is Michael Moore's recent his most recent film that he executive produced, which is essentially about the clean energy, which is about clean energy, you know, so, like this analysis of the clean energy bit, what is now like this huge business. You know, it started with the environmental movement, but I really learned a lot in that film. Essentially, you learn how there is no clean energy. And then other films that I've seen that I want to rewatch include Selma and films that involve the, you know, the black life here in America. We're at a time when, you know, it's this reckoning, and many people are asking themselves, many white people are asking themselves, like, what they haven't seen and how they can understand and how they can listen. And there's another film called Slavery by Another Name. It's also a documentary. But, you know, also at the end of the day, I love to, you know, going to see big, like, blockbuster films, you know, like Avatar and like super visual films that are just beautiful, but have strong messages behind them. Literature, I mean, you know, what I'm reading now, it's not literature, but it's something I've read a few times in my life. It's called The Power of Myth, and it's by Joseph Campbell, who was a mythologist. He passed away, I don't know how many years ago, but
I think something
this,
about him.
yeah, this was. You know, initially I became interested in his work in high school, and I just love how he he takes you through like human history and our use of symbols and imagery back into, when we were living in caves or when we were, making the cave
Yeah,
art.
it's
And yeah, it's really fascinating. It's part of the reason why I became a photographer, because, I realized that like we're helping to create these myths, these understandings that can be metaphors. A photograph can be a metaphor.
as I told earlier, it's like to be archivist.
Yeah, exactly. What else? I mean, I've been reading a lot of books that are more about psychology than anything else, which I'm always interested in. I was a psychology major in school, but also about trauma, which I was experiencing in these past years. So I was reading this book called "The Body Keeps the Score." The Body Keeps the Score, and it's about like how trauma is stored in the body. So, and I was always a Hemingway fan. But I haven't read much fiction, in the past couple of years. I've been sort of, I should get back into it because it's so good for me to read it,
Yeah, it's some kind of how I tell it sometimes. It's like trips to different countries, to different people. It's way how we can go from this universe to someone other, to some different people and to different worlds.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I'm reminded of something that I read in A Movable Feast, which is one of my favorite Hemingway books, where like he talks about, when he was living in Paris and he was in his 20s and he, was having a crazy wild time. He wrote something like, if one is lucky enough to live in Paris in their 20s, then anywhere else they go for the rest of their life, they will carry a piece of the city with them, because this place is a movable feast. Like, and I really identify with that, not because I lived in Paris, but I lived in New York in my 20s, and I feel that way about New York. It's interesting now that I live in Los Angeles. I still feel the
It's
peace of the
different.
city. Yeah, I still carry a piece of New York with me. But yeah. Did I answer all the questions? Sorry,
Yes.
man.
Yeah, it's it.
Started to ramble a little bit there, but.
Yeah. I fully understand you. It's here. It's just a few more questions. It's the last one. Last big question. Prints of your photos. Do photographer need to print his works, or it's not necessary?
Oh man, again, it depends on
For
what you.
you
For me at
print
this
it or
moment,
not?
it's not necessary, I would say. My work is primarily made to be seen online, but at the same time, I haven't had a lot of exhibitions, but the exhibitions I've had, it's always been great watching the reaction of somebody walking through the exhibition and looking at the pictures. And then, beyond that, having a conversation with them and really engaging with them about the work. I think that's very interesting. I love seeing the reactions and the interpretations, and so I would love to in the future do more of that. But ultimately, I think like my audience, the people who I want to see my pictures, is the world. The whole world, as much of the world as I can. So the best platform is Instagram for me at this moment. Though of
I
course
think
I'll always
it's.
love if the images are chosen for an exhibition, that's always nice, but I don't, for my work it's not necessary making prints.
Yeah, understood. But it's this question I got from my friends, some Moscow reportage photographers, and they told me that, man, you definitely need to print some of your works. But now I think it's not nothing that's nothing special that I can print, and I think I need to wait some more time. Yeah, and the last
Well,
part
it can help.
it's
It can help
yeah.
with edit. Sorry to interrupt you. It can help with
No, okay.
editing sometimes. And sometimes it can help with editing. I know with like writing, for example, and I'm not a writer, but I've written quite a bit. And when I write on the computer, and then if I print it out on the printer, when I look at it on the page in my hands, sometimes it changes how I look at it. Or the way that I edit it, or it can change the interpretation because, and I think maybe part of that is the way that I grew up as a kid because, you grow up holding books in your hands and holding magazines in your hands and holding photo books in your hands. That's how I grew up. I think a lot of people grew up now learning about photography online, so it might not be a part of their process, but for me it can help. And actually certainly when I edit, as now I'm editing these books on the Congo, and in the past when I edited the Libya book and the Cuba book, I have to print everything out so I can look at it and so I can see it. So as far as like process and work, yeah, for sure. I have to print things out so I can see how they're working with each other or working against each other in the context of a book.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You tell what you want.
Yeah, no, that's it.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah, and so if it's about the process, and if I like use the printing of imagery in my process, yeah, for sure it's necessary when I'm making a book. And I could even say that it would be necessary if I want to be more analytical of my editing process, in the sequencing process. But I don't think
Yeah.
it's necessary for all photographers. I think it really depends. I'm of a generation that is not the same as somebody who's in their 20s right now,
I really understand it. And it's just one small blitz and two more philosophical questions, one serious and one not so. At first, your favorite camera? Short, just one. What? Which camera? If you can't choose anything more, just one. Which?
Well, it's not a camera, it's the phone. I would choose the iPhone if I was going to choose one recording device. Because it has everything. I can do stills, I can do video, I can do audio, I can do all that stuff. But if I was going to choose a camera, then I would say I would probably. Man, that's a hard question. That's a really hard question because they all have their benefits.
It's it may be not just only benefits in technical, it's maybe something that you love with your heart. Because I love Mamiya RB, it's the great camera, and I love to use it. Maybe you have something.
Yeah, I would say that about the Mamiya 6 then. I would choose the
Okay.
Mamiya 6. Yeah.
Oh. Okay, your favorite frame format? It's aspect ratio, 4x5, six by six, maybe
Six by
four by
six,
three.
yeah. Yeah, square format is my favorite format, even though I've been shooting a lot of vertical recently, which has been really challenging. But yeah, but at the end of the day, I love the square format. I think that's feels the most right.
Your favorite focal length? Wide, medium, tele, tele, te tele.
It's usually wide. It's usually like around 35 millimeters.
Oh, it's classically. It's a lot. Really, a lot of photographers say 35 and something like this.
Yeah.
Someone tell about 40, someone about 28, but it's all around 35.
Yeah, I would say even between 28 and 35 somewhere. I think the iPhone lens is like a 31 or a 32 or something like that. And I've gotten
26.
so used to it, but oh, it's a 26? Really?
Yeah, it's in the last iPhones, it's 13, 26, and 52.
Okay. So I guess it'd be closer to 28, I guess. That's my ideal lens right now. Yeah.
Colors or black and white?
Oh, like again, it depends, but I would say ultimately color. Yeah.
And two last questions, two philosophical questions, one serious, one not so much. At first, the serious question, why we are creative? It's maybe di different ways, but if you have one sentence or one word.
Why are we creative in general? Why are we creative
Yeah.
in general, or why
For
am I
you,
creative?
you're creative. For yourself.
I'm creative because I'm curious. Yeah, I'm creative because I'm curious.
Yeah, understood. Thanks.
You know, I'm
And
empathetic as well, but that's not driving my creativity. My creativity is driven more by curiosity. So yeah.
It's nice. It's really nice. It's curiosity. It's something that drives me or other. It's not only for one person. It's for a lot of us. I think for some of my friends, as for me, curiosity and desire to be curious, it's one general thing that drives us to be photographers, as you, I think. And the last question, it's more of a joke, but I ask a lot of photographers about it, and here we have gods. It's animals, gods. And gods
Wait,
have
goats. Oh,
god.
goats. Got it.
God,
Yeah.
yes. And in their eyes, there is horizontal. It's like cats have vertical eyes,
Right.
gods have horizontal eyes. Why? Why you think they have this eyes?
That's a very good question. I mean, I would think, well, my immediate response would be that cats in the nighttime, something about, being able to see more clearly at night. So maybe goats in the daytime, but then that seems a
Maybe.
bit simplistic.
It's
Maybe.
not for a reasonable science question. It's maybe something crazy if you wish.
I don't know. The sideways, maybe Maybe they see the world completely differently. I don't know. Maybe they see it upside down. I don't know.
Yeah, okay. I think that's all. Thank you so much for this conversation, for these answers. It's a lot for me, I think, really. Thank you so
Yeah.
much one more time.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I
Yeah.
appreciate it. Yeah, I'll send this over to you.
Yeah, thanks. Ребят, спасибо большое всем тем, кто дослушал до конца. Это правда для меня было очень важно, потому что Майкл — это человек, которого я несказанно уважаю. И это человек, который очень много, на самом деле, показал, не зная об этом. Вот. Поэтому мне было очень важно с ним поговорить. Прошу прощения за мой корявый английский, за не самое лучшее качество записи. Ну, говорить из России со Штатами не всегда супер просто. Но в любом случае, это был очень крутой разговор, мне очень понравилось. И спасибо вам большое за то, что послушали. Вот. Всем пока и удачи.